Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's head to the phone lines right now to be joined by a friend of the show, Matt Verderam, to go through some of the top stories right now in the National Football League. Matt, it's been a while, man. How have you been?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing fantastic, man. Let's start with this. Two things. We asked Patrick Mahomes this. We have to ask you this as well. Number one, what is the word that you struggle with spelling? My word is convenience. I have no clue how to spell convenience. I just try to get close, and I let spell check take over. What's that word for you?
That's funny, because I would give you the same word. That word, just every time. I try to spell it different every time, and every time I'm wrong. Convenience, just psycho is another one, too, that, like, I know how to spell it, but if I'm typing it fast, anything like psycho, psychology, I always end up, like, mixing, like, one of the letters up the wrong way.
One last of these kinds of questions. Who is your favorite fictional football player? Mine is Tim Riggins from Friday Night Lights.
I'm literally in the middle of watching Friday Night Lights again, and I've seen it before. I'll give you a different one. Tim Riggins is a great call. Man, fictional. I mean, I'll stay in the same ballpark. I'll stay with Smash Williams of the same show. So we got the backfield covered.
Okay, no, absolutely. Are you more of a Lila Garrity or a Tyra Collette type?
I mean, Can't really go wrong, but I'll go Lila.
Okay, all right. I just wanted to make sure. You got to ask these kind of questions. I love the show, so I just got to always check to see where you are when it comes to this. All right, a lot to get into. Let's start with this. You're very plugged in when it comes to the Kansas City Chiefs. What are you hearing regarding Josh?
Honestly, there's not a lot out there. I've done my due diligence. I've poked around. I've texted with some people. And, you know, I think that the basic word has been – there's a lot of uncertainty. Now, to be honest and to be very transparent, this is something that it's a personal matter with Simmons, and anybody you're going to text in and around the team is going to be very cagey with this, and understandably so. You know, everything that we know is, like, he left on Sunday morning, went back to California. It's reportedly been a family matter. I don't have any reason to believe that's not true. But obviously he's still not back in Kansas City. I think the big question right now, and I don't know the answer to this despite trying to find out, is, you know, how much of this are the Chiefs aware of? Like, how much are they, you know, how in communication are they with Josh Simmons? You know, do they know the full extent of whatever it is that's going on? Because I think, you know, at least, especially in the beginning of the week, there's kind of a question of, like, How much do even they know? Now, listen, that is obviously something that can change minute to minute, hour to hour. They may have a full picture by this point. But, you know, they're supporting him. They're obviously working to get him back with the team. But it is a personal matter that at this point that there's not a lot of clarity on what's going on.
Why didn't the Chiefs just come out and release a statement like that from the very, very beginning if it's a family matter? So that is what Nate Taylor is reporting. That's what he's hearing. It's a family matter, which is certainly correct. Understandable. You don't have to do a press conference to explain something that's going on with your mom or your brother or your sister. I think most people respect that. But I feel like the Chiefs have kind of let this kind of cloud of mystery circle around this story when you could have just came out, said it was a family matter. And I think a lot of the questions would have went away until Josh Simmons comes back.
So I'm actually going to go a little bit different here, but kind of in the same realm what you're saying. I actually think his agent's done him a disservice. The agent should have said something, put out a statement. He's repped by a big agent. Like, I think you put out a statement saying, if you're the agent, look, you know, Josh is dealing with a family matter. He's in California. You know, timetable for return is unclear, but, you know, he'll be back as soon as, you know, it feels ready or it's resolved, however you want to word it. I think the team is hesitant to do it because, you know, you don't want to say something that the player feels is insensitive. you maybe also don't want to put the player in a position where you feel like you're airing out any of his business. And if you're having, and I don't know that this is the case, but if they're having a hard time communicating with him, or they were, then also, you know, you don't want anything to get misconstrued. But look, there's no question that the lack of communication about what is going on has led to a lot of people, understandably, trying to connect dots and speculate. Look, I think that can be irresponsible at times. Also, it's human nature. And, you know, right now, I mean, he's been playing at a Pro Bowl level. He's a first-round pick. He's a left tackle for Patrick Mahomes. That's going to be a story. He's not the 53rd guy in the roster. He is a starting left tackle. So, it's an unfortunate situation. You hope he's back soon. You hope everything's okay. But, yeah, I mean, the lack of communication on the agent's part, the team's part, has left a lot of speculation to be had.
Right now, we're talking to Matt Verderam about the top storylines with the Chiefs. We'll get to some of the national storylines here coming up in just a minute as well. I've really tried to stress this week that I'm curious to get your thoughts on. I don't think Jalen Moore is getting enough credit for what he just did on Sunday Night Football. I think it would have been certainly understandable for him to not play on Sunday. He had a baby earlier in the day. He hasn't been playing, hasn't been getting practice with the ones. It would have made a lot of sense for him to just be on. He is with family. For him to not only leave his family, but come play at an incredibly high level, and look like he's going to start this week, that takes a consummate pro. I wanted Jalen Moore really highlighted this week for doing this win. I think there's a lot of players in the league that wouldn't have played on Sunday Night Football.
There's no question. Jalen Moore deserves a ton of credit for everything you just said, Karen. Like he had a child. You know, I mean, his wife had a child in the morning, and he played that game with really no notice. I mean, the Chiefs did not know who was going to be the left tackle until a handful of hours for game time on Sunday. I mean, it wasn't like this was something going into the weekend. They knew they didn't have any clue. Josh Simmons was just gone Sunday morning, so they had to figure that out, and they're asking a guy who just had the birth of his child that, hey, man, you had no first-team reps, as you point out. Go out there and play. That is an extremely, extremely difficult thing to do. I mean, he played no left tackle reps in training camp, none in the preseason. They put him out there. Obviously, of course, he played there for San Francisco and in limited action while he was with the Niners. To go out there and be asked to guard the block Aiden Hutchinson, and do it mostly on an island, and to hold up the way he did, yeah, I mean, that. Look, I'll tell you one thing. That is going to earn him an immense amount of respect in that role. You're going to have guys in there who are like, that guy is somebody I want in my foxhole. Because you're right. I mean, a lot of guys would have just said, hey, look, my kid was born this morning, you know, and maybe even if they played, they wouldn't play particularly well. They're just right. For him to come in and play like that, oh, I don't think there's any question. That is something everybody in that locker room is going to respect the hell out of Jalen Moore.
Right now, we're talking to Matt Verderam with the top storylines right now with the Kansas City Chiefs. We had Mitch Holthus on the show a couple of days ago, and I asked him, what does it mean for the Chiefs' offense to get Rashee Rice back? And he said, it's like adding Deebo Samuel to an offense in the middle part of the season. Now, Deebo, I think, is a little bit on the high end, but I think the sentiment is, I don't know if there is a team in the league that is going to add a player of this caliber in the middle of the season in the entire National Football League. When you take an offense that is trending in the direction that Kansas City has, and now you give them potentially their best offensive skill position player, we're talking about a team that could potentially be top five offensively by the time the year is done.
Oh, look, I mean, Rashee Rice is the best weapon on the team. Xavier Worthy is great. Hollywood Brown, Juju, they played well this year. No question. Tyquan Thornton's played well. And, of course, Kelce, to his credit, he's tracking for nearly 1,000 yards. But this is the weapon on this team. There's no doubt. He was on a monster pace when he hurt his knee last year. And I think if you look at the Chiefs, look at the last 3 weeks. I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but you know, they have averaged over 30 a game. Yardage totals, I believe, are something like 411 on average for the last 3 weeks. Well over 20 first downs on average over the last 3 weeks. I mean, this is a team that they're operating right now as a top three offense in the last month. And now you're bringing this guy back. Look, this to me, as long as they can continue to block, whether it's Moore or Simmons at left tackle or Carlos, whoever it is, as long as they continue to block the way they're blocking, and credit to Kingsley Suamati, who has been awesome the last three games. If they do that, they're going to score a ton of points. I mean, there is nobody stopping them from throwing the football. They have too many weapons. And not only do they have weapons, but they work together in tandem really well. And that is something that I think maybe gets a little underplayed. You got Worthy, who can run kind of not the whole route tree, but he can do it. He can do the short game. He can do the long game. You know, then you've got Hollywood, who can certainly run deep, but also has more of an intermediate route game. Rice kills you on the intermediate game. That's where his bread and butter is. And then Thornton is the ultimate deep ball guy. It's like you got a lot of guys who can just stretch you horizontally, stretch you vertically, and catch the ball and beat you man-to-man, beat you in zone, beat you with speed, beat you with size. It's a lot.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
And Rice is the best of all of them. Like, I think this is the first time since 2022 when Mahomes won his second MVP where when I watch them offensively, I just expect them to score. I don't care where they are on the field. My thought is they're going to score a touchdown, and it's bared out in the numbers. Only the Colts have scored on a higher percentage of their possessions. The Chiefs are scoring like 52% of their drives. That's a crazy number. They've been in the red zone 17 times in the last three games. So, you know, look, now you add Rice back to that, yeah, they're extremely dangerous.
I was asked this question on an interview, and it was a very interesting question that, honestly, I hadn't thought about. The question was, on Sunday Night Football, did it mean more for the Chiefs to score 30 points or for the defense to hold an offense like the Lions to 17 points? I said it's the offense because I think their offense just over the last, I would say, year and a half has been kind of middle of the road. And this is the first time that we've seen in a while that the Chiefs could potentially have an elite offense. The Chiefs have been top five defensively, it feels like, for 2 years. That hasn't been the case with the offense. So I think the story is more about the offense. What side are you on? Do you think it says more about their offense or their defense, how they performed on Sunday night?
I think the offense, because of kind of to your point, look, they're regaining a confidence they maybe haven't had the last few years. And scoring 30 and doing it as easily as they did, not stunting that growth, so to speak, I think is key. I will say this, though. I was very – like, the first two drives, Detroit scored 10 points. Third drive, they moved it a little bit. They get that fourth down. Then you know, they got pressure, and the throw's low. I mean, Amon-Ra St. Brown, I think, would tell you he should have caught the ball. If it was low, he couldn't come up with it. The whole game changed after that. It's 24-7 the rest of the way. Detroit scored 7 points on its last six drives and averaged 4.2 yards per play on those last six drives. That's elite football defensively. And it didn't feel like an elite game defensively. And I think part of that's because early they didn't play particularly well. But, you know, long term, one thing about the Chiefs this year, it's funny. If you look at their numbers, their rush defense is not ranked highly, and a lot of that is because Justice Hill ripped off like a 71-yarder in garbage time. If you take that out, all of a sudden their numbers are actually pretty good. They shut down a Lions team. They run the ball against everybody. They didn't get 100 yards in that game. They shut down Saquon Barkley earlier in the year. I think it's important for the defense, but I think I think what you're saying, like I agree, the defense has that confidence about them. The offense needs to keep playing that way, and I think that was a big confidence boost. Primetime, got to win it. They hung 30 on the Lions.
Right now, we're talking to Matt Verderam of Sports Illustrated, just getting his thoughts on the National Football League. Matt, you've covered this league for a long time. Have you ever seen as much parity as we have right now? I mean, I feel like we say this every year, but this really bears itself out. You could argue right now that the Chiefs are the best team in the AFC even though they are ranked third right now in their own division, and they would be outside of the playoffs if they started today. They currently have the eighth best record of any team right now in the AFC. It just feels like that's one of the things. You take a team like the New York Giants, for example. The Giants in the same week could lose to the Saints and then turn around and beat the Philadelphia Eagles. I've kind of said it where I think there's eight teams that are already eliminated from the postseason, and then there's 24 teams that your guess is just as good as mine.
I think by the end of the year, it'll kind of shake out like it usually does. But I will say this. I can't remember a year where you look at it and just go, man, the playoffs, like, I have no idea. Like, I have no idea who is better than somebody else. Now, I will say, I think it's fascinating, and this has got to be a first. Maybe it's not. Maybe somebody can fact check this. Has there ever been a team that's 3-3 that's a betting Super Bowl favorite? Has that ever happened? Like, that feels impossible. They're not the favorite, like, oh, somebody put them number one in their power rankings. They're the favorite on DraftKings. Like, there's this, and Mahomes is the favorite to win MVP, and they're 3-3. But I think it does speak to a few things. It speaks to the lack of quality of a lot of these teams. The Eagles have not played well. The Bills are 4-2. The Bills have played the easiest schedule in the world. The teams they've beaten are combined 3-21, and they can't stop anybody. They're an absolute sieve. And it's, you know, you look at it and just say, well, if the Chiefs get right, I think this is why the betting markets are what they are. If the Chiefs get right, who's beating them? Who's doing it? Because the upside of that team is just massive. Now, in the NFC, I really like what Tampa's doing. They've overcome a lot of injuries. Detroit is still a really, really good team. I think Philadelphia, look, they could certainly get right and get well. But it is a year in the NFL where, yes, you look around and go, I don't know. I mean, you know, what style do you like? What team do you think is the most growth potential? But it's crazy for a team like KC, 3-3, and you look at them and you're like, yeah, they got a really legit shot to be the number one seed in the conference. That normally would never happen, and that is absolutely the case right now.
Matt, keeping it in the AFC, are you a believer in the Indianapolis Colts?
I'm a believer in the Colts from the standpoint that I think they're well coached. I think Adam Romo is a terrific hire on the defensive side. Steichen knows what he's doing offensively. And look, I said all offseason, I wrote about it, I reported on this. The Colts went out and got Daniel Jones for three reasons. He's accurate, doesn't turn the ball over, and he's got a legit amount of mobility. Those are the reasons, okay? Those things have borne fruit. He's been accurate. He's only thrown, I believe it's three picks. And he can use his legs. He can keep down with his legs. When you have those three things in a Shane Steichen offense, you're going to at least be effective. And Anthony Richardson, look, I think the reality was just wasn't accurate enough. When you're completing 50% of your passes in 2025 in the NFL, it's just not going to happen. It's not enough. I don't think, though, they can win the Super Bowl or even get to it. Like, Jones has been good, and I respect that he's having a real renaissance in his career, and that's great for him. They're not, in my opinion, good enough to beat the Bills in the playoffs, beat Kansas City in the playoffs. Like, I think they could – anybody else in the conference, you can make the argument. Like, could they beat Denver? Yeah. Yeah, they already beat Denver this year. Could they beat the Chargers? Do they play on Sunday? Yeah, they could. But I think as the season goes on, that offense, I mean, they're scoring right now like 61% of their drives. I mean, most years the leading team is right around 50. They're not going to continue that. Their schedule also gets much harder. I do think they're a playoff team. I don't think they're a Super Bowl team.
Moving it over to the NFC, I mean, this is the first time in a while that I have no clue who the best team in the NFC is. I think it's Tampa Bay, but we're talking about no Mike Evans, no Chris Godwin. It looks like Emeka Egbuka, he's going to miss some time with an injury. We're talking about their 1-3 wide receivers are potentially out for this thing. The Lions, who do they have healthy in their secondary? You mentioned Philadelphia. They don't look right now. Like, if I ask you right now who's the best team in the NFC, I feel like there's potentially five different answers on who that could be.
Yeah, there is. You're right, Carrington. I think I picked the Rams to beat the Bucs in the NFC title game to start the year, and I'm going to stay with that. I will say this, though. Tampa's been incredibly impressive. They're missing the three receivers you mentioned. They're also missing Jalen McMillan, who had 8 touchdowns as a rookie receiver last year. He's been out with a neck injury all year. They've been missing Bucky Irving, who's got a foot and shoulder injury right now. Tristan Wirfs didn't play a good chunk of the start of the year at left tackle. They're missing guys on the interior of the line. The question I have with Tampa is, look, I believe in that offense, especially when they're healthy. I think they're going to score a ton of points. Baker's been awesome. He would be my MVP right now with Mahomes close second. The question for me, though, is can that defense, when they play really good teams, can they stop anybody? Like, to this point, they played a Niners team with a bunch of injuries and Mac Jones. They played the Jets, who are the Jets. They played a Texans team that's great defensively but can't score a point. They played Atlanta, who apparently, unless they're playing the Bills, aren't good. But if they play the Bills, they can gain 500 yards and a half. That's the concern I have with Tampa. You know, when they played Philly, Philly lit them up, at least in the first half. Second half, they didn't complete a pass, but they scored over 30 points. The concern, you know, and then on the side of the Rams, just can you stay healthy? Nakua's already hurt. Stafford, we know what his back was like this summer. Can he last all year? Defensively, I love their front seven. Can those corners, can they hold up in the secondary? The NFC, I feel like there's a lot of teams that, to your point, like, yeah, they're interesting. There's also a lot of questions. I like the Lions a lot, but defensively, can you hold up? It felt like the Chiefs just did whatever they wanted to do in that game. Now, I get they're missing guys, but also, too, like, it's not like they're missing all pros. They're getting guys back, we're fine, but they're not getting guys back, we're going to alter and shift everything. I like the Rams still. I still think the Rams are the cream of the crop if they can get right, but it's a big if. There's a lot of question marks about all these teams.
Matt, can you tell me why Mike McDaniel still has a job? Because, I mean, it seems like it is absolute dysfunction down there. Tua said, I mean, it honestly is one of the worst quotes I've ever heard a quarterback give. He didn't even clean it up very well. Mike McDaniel, it feels like we're wasting our time, that he's going to be fired before Halloween.
I agree. I think the reason he hasn't been fired yet is Stephen Ross is probably just sitting there figuring it's a lost season anyway, and we're just going to ride this out for a little bit. And then I would imagine Anthony Weaver, the DC, is really well-respected in the organization. I would think he'd be the interim if he wants to be. But, look, that's a mess. Like, if you know, I think a lot of people have looked at New Orleans and said, like, oh, they're the fire sale team. And they could be. I mean, Olave and Shaheed and guys like that. Sure, Kamara. I got to tell you, the Dolphins, there is a for sale sign on the front of that building. And if you make an offer, I think you got to do Jalen Phillips, Bradley Chubb, Devon Achane. I think you got to give a lot to get Achane, but I think you could. Waddle, no, because of his contract. Obviously, Hill would have been gone, but he got hurt. That team, they will get rid of anybody not nailed down. I mean, they need to regroup and rebuild. Tua is probably going to be there next year, because if you look at his contract, it can't really move off him before that. But, yeah, that – look, I thought he'd be the first coach fired this year. I remember writing that this offseason. I wrote it again after they blew that lead to Carolina, and then the Titans decide to fire Callahan, which, listen, that makes plenty of sense. He was atrocious. But, no, I don't think McDaniel's going to last even another month. That day's coming.
That is our guy, Matt Verderam of Sports Illustrated, joining us on the show today, going through some of the top storylines with the Chiefs and also the National Football League. Matt, great stuff, man. We appreciate you as always.
You got it. Anytime.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.